The We Have Spoken podcast contains spoilers for season 3 of The Mandalorian. So if you haven't caught up with previous episodes, this is your final warning. Spoilers are ahead. Welcome to a brand new episode of the We Have Spoken podcast. I'm Chuck P here with my man, Mike the Grim Grimmion. What's up there, buddy?
Yeah, pretty much the same things as always.
The usual things. The usual things that are up.
For those of you who were looking for this yesterday, blame my job and Chuck's job, and you can blame Canada. You can blame somebody besides us.
Just don't blame it on the rain.
Don't blame it on the rain.
The rain don't mind.
No.
And the rain don't care.
No. Sorry.
I'm a little punchy here. You had a late work day.
I had another podcast I was doing. Charles had to record another podcast. We couldn't put it together to get together and record yesterday. So we are sorry if you have been waiting an extra day. We hope you are well.
Yes. Brand new episode of The Mandalorian, The Foundling, directed by Carl, man, I like the sound of my own voice, Weathers.
Look, when I was growing up in New Orleans, he was...
Life stories.
He was talking. Carl Weathers be talking.
About everything except what we wanted him to talk about. It was the problem.
He's had some good episodes, but there's always something in the episodes that he directs that makes me go, no, nope.
Like, maybe not so much.
Not so much this one.
Before we jump into the episode, though, we've got some a listener email.
Yes, we have listener email. We have spoken pod23@gmail.com is our email address if you would like to send us a message. Hate mail, love mail. Discussion of what we've talked about, discussion of anything.
Chain mail.
What? Oh, dang. Oh. Junk mail, too. We don't care.
Yeah, we'll take it.
Don't sign us up for nothing, though. That would be awful. We also have a Facebook page. We Have Spoken podcast on Facebook. You can send us a message through Facebook Messenger. Okay, first email. Mando episode 4 by Patrick.
You say that like we're about to read a book.
No, I mean,
it's chapter like, one.
Chapter one, episode 4. Okay. I'm curious to see how the story and character building pays off. I say that because otherwise seems that they aren't using the characters wisely. It was kind of interesting to see more about the Mandalorian's day-to-day activities, but how do they get enough privacy in that cave to do day-to-day necessities? We don't know how big the cave is.
We do not. We've only seen the one spot where the armor is.
Yeah. Or they might live in completely different areas all around it. There's other caves. It seems silly that they can't even take their helmets off around each other or around a designated partner. Well, this is the way.
Yeah. Nobody's supposed to see
their face. They're not supposed to do that.
Even other Mandalorians.
If they're gonna make little baby Mandalorians, they're going to do it dinking helmets against each other.
Interesting.
I'm just saying. How do they stay hydrated? When she says she used to climb peaks like that back in basic, no one says, yeah, but how long ago was that? Well, I mean, that'd be rude. You don't ask a lady her age.
Yeah.
Katie Sackhoff, she's doing just fine.
Yeah, she's okay.
And who makes camp when trying to save their son? That is a good point. They're like, we're going to make camp here. The thing's at the top of this ridge or whatever, but we're going to make camp and then climb at first light.
Yeah, but they're so emotionless. Like, they're very matter of fact. And even, like, he never screams out, my son, or anything when that giant.
But he's not supposed to.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's not the way.
Right. It's almost like the Jedi. The Jedi are supposed to be, like, emotionless and not make these connections and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's similar to that.
They have more connections, I think, than Jedi do, and they do have emotions. You see it, but
and they procreate. Jedi aren't supposed to have relationships.
Right. The last thing he says is, this is the second time wildlife has rolled up on them, which is true. It's true.
He didn't scout any of that. Right. Apparently, it's happened more than once.
Yeah, and he says, do they not know about pulling 360-degree security? You know, all those things are true. And
yeah.
We're going to discuss all of those. But one of the ones that we did touch on briefly is yes, why is nobody watching out for stuff around this water?
Right. If that thing has happened and swooped in and stolen a child or someone before, you know he's coming
they're
back.
They're like, it got away again. Again?
Yeah, again?
Again? Again?
How is this again?
What?
And then they bring three babies back to the camp. Like,
I mean,
what is going on? Y'all going to cook those things? Y'all have like a luau or something?
Because I don't, we'll get to that. But again?
Yeah, right.
All right. So our second message is from Teresa. She sent us a message on Facebook Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
So for the past few seasons, we've been trying to guess who saved Grogu from the Jedi Temple. R2-D2, Mace Windu, Yoda, maybe even Anakin. But no, it was Jar Jar Binks.
In a way, yes.
In a way, it was. My best, yes. If you were like me and couldn't place the man when you saw him wielding two lightsabers, my best, the voice... And I guess character capture for...
Yeah, yeah. He did all that.
For Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah. His character, Jedi Kelleran? Is that what his name?
Yeah, it's Kelleran Beck.
Okay. Seemed to come out of nowhere. Has he ever been introduced before? He has? Okay, so we will get to that too. Mm-hmm. I'm still unsure about last week's episode. We can't go backwards. In the Dr. Pershing episode,
we can't go back.
Is Kane just weeding out people while she's trying to get the cloning equipment, or was it just revenge? I think revenge, but also I think something else. And you and I, we got that message about it. Hoping they will resolve that. Otherwise, it will feel like a wasted episode to me. By the way, I recommended your podcast to my brother, and now you have a new listener.
Yay!
Yay!
Welcome, new listener.
New listeners. One of us.
One of us.
Sorry. Okay, so...
All right, what do you want to touch on first?
Real quick, okay. Before we go into the new episode, I saw online, and I sent it to you, I believe, something, a fan theory about Kane, the old Citizen Kane, who dimed out the professor or the... Doctor, whatever. Look, I'm not thinking right, y'all.
Dr. Pershing.
My brain is for
normally that's me now. It's
duh. Okay. More than once, when they showed her, she touched her like abdomen or her uniform around that abdomen area. I thought it was like a nervous, let me make sure I'm well put together thing. But somebody has said that perhaps. They don't need the doctor anymore because they've already succeeded and she is currently with child, the clone child. And that's why they got rid of the doctor.
You sent me that and I watched that video and I immediately thought, nah, no way. So I went back in season two and found all the episodes that she is in.
Right.
And there's a couple times in two of the episodes where before she speaks to Moff Gideon, she adjusts her jacket and holds her hand on her belly.
Okay.
So
okay.
I think
okay.
It's just not a nervous tic, but it's just like something she does.
It's a feint. Are we thinking it's a feint here by
I do.
Stirwers?
I think so. And I also think the reason why she cranked up the machine to completely fry Pershing's brain is because she was feeling that he was leaning into all the reprogramming, if you want to call it that, that the New Republic was doing, and that she knew he had a bunch of information on Grogu and the whole cloning facility and all that stuff. And she, who I think is still working for Moff Gideon, was afraid of that information getting out. So she figured the only way to make sure they could still keep that a secret, that they were trying to bring Palpatine back, was to fry his brain.
Well, all of that being said, we have to remember that they don't just show up fresh off the Star Destroyer and put them in these buildings and say, go in there and be part of the Republic.
All right, they get the mind flayer.
No, they have to go through this camp first, right? And I'm sure at this camp, for however long they're there, they have to tell everything that they did, everything that they were involved with. Everybody in the Republic already knows he was involved with cloning and why they were trying to do and what they were trying to do. He's already given all the goods up. There's nothing for him to hide anymore.
I don't think he gave up all of them.
I think he did. And I think that was the only way he could be accepted into the program that he's in, like, you know, the rehabilitation program or whatever. But I still think it's revenge. I still think she's, you know, she is still working for Gideon, or, you know, somebody adjacent to Gideon or whatever. Maybe it's that other guy that's blue. Who knows? I just think it was revenge. I think it was just like, you dimed us out, so you got to go. Because she set him up the whole way. Set him up. Like, she worked him and set him up. Oh, absolutely. Okay? Also, I just thought about this. If she was carrying the baby, she would have never jumped from a moving train.
No, absolutely not.
So absolutely not. Throw that one out the window.
Yeah, I think she's still working for Gideon because she doesn't turn in that cloning tech that they got from.
We don't see it. She could have turned around and handed it to him. I mean,
maybe, but I don't.
There's
know.
A lot of stuff that we don't see and just right. is assumed.
Also, we've been terrible with this series about guessing what was coming next.
Yeah, no, we're awful at that.
You can go back to episode one and see how terrible we are of saying, well, this is probably what's going to happen, and then the complete opposite happens.
Yeah. Yeah, this show has a habit of like, and now they're going to think this, but we're going to do the other thing.
Right.
And like, they know what the fans are going to think. They know.
Yeah.
There's enough fans that are writing this show that they're like, okay, so the fans are going to think this is happening, but what we're really going to do is the old switcheroo.
Yeah, or just throw in something that you would never expect. Like when they threw in Ahsoka asking, where is Grand Admiral Thrawn? And nobody was expecting that name to be dropped at all.
I was not, nor were you.
No, I was very shocked and happy at the same time because that just meant, ooh, Thrawn's coming, which means Ezra's coming, which means, yes, more Rebels.
Right.
All right, let's talk about Ahmed Best showing up on the show. As soon as the elevator door opened and Grogu looks up and the figure turns around, I see his face. I knew who it was. I was like, that's freaking Jar Jar.
And not really Jar Jar.
Not really Jar Jar, but the actor who did the motion capture and the voice. I thought it was a nice way to give Ahmed Best some redemption because he caught so much flack for the portrayal of Jar Jar Binks, and it wasn't his fault.
No.
He was portraying a character written by George Lucas, who he wrote as comic relief, and it was terrible comic relief. And he got blacklisted for it. He got death threats in the mail. It got to the point where the man almost took his own life because he couldn't deal with it anymore, and finally got help and was able to resolve all those issues. So the character that he plays, Kelleran Beck, was created specifically for him for this short-lived kids game show that Disney put out only on their YouTube channel. It's called Star Wars Jedi Temple Challenge. He was the host. He was a Jedi who was supposed to be training these contestants in this little kids skill challenge or whatever. So that's where that character originally appeared. So, I mean, and I didn't know that. I had to look that up because I had no clue. I didn't know that thing existed. Yeah, it's very cool. So for anyone else who was wondering, where the hell did this character come from? You can go on YouTube and you can see episodes, so you know that's it. But I thought that was very cool of Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau to include him and make him a Jedi. I thought, well, I was like, this is great.
I mean, I've never been shy about how much I disliked the character of Jar Jar, but the man that plays the character is not the guy that you should blame.
No, at all.
And you know, George Lucas caught his share of deserved flack for that too, but he's George Lucas, so he can shrug it off. But
yeah, he's got money.
Ahmed Best can't, you know.
Right.
So I don't know that you would say that this is a redemption for him, but I think it's a redemption for Star Wars to give him an opportunity to be involved in a different way. Something that he can just be like, hey, you know, nobody's going to come for me. This guy's nice with it. He's got the two sabers, you know.
Yeah.
He's handling business.
He went from a character who was hated to the character that saves Grogu.
Right.
You know?
Right. I think it's a nice touch. I hope we see some more from that character, because obviously he and Grogu got away and went somewhere. Obviously, yeah. It looked like Naboo, because that was in...
I don't even think they showed it. I thought they were still in hyperspace.
But the ship that they left in...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was like a Naboo ship.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like they're going to have to show, and maybe not this season, but as long as The Mandalorian goes on, where was Grogu during all of this? Like, Order 66 takes place 19 years before A New Hope. So where was he hidden that entire time? How was he found?
Right.
Like, those questions that need to be answered at some point.
Sure. Absolutely.
And also, like, he's 50 in season one when they find him. He looked like, I don't know how that species ages.
Well, it's an alien and we're not supposed to know.
Fair enough. But I mean,
they get to keep him small and cute as long as they want.
Yeah. Because they can sell more toys.
Right. It's true.
Yeah.
It's
100%
true.
Yeah, it's marketing. It's all about marketing and toy sales.
Yes. Without a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, just go back and watch The Phantom Menace. It's a giant 2-hour toy commercial.
Yeah, no, it is.
All the ships and all the little, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's all it was. Can we talk about the sad training camp that the Mandalorians had on that beach? I'm like, this is the wish.com of training camps. Like, what is going on here? This looks terrible.
I mean, it didn't. What were you wanting it to look like?
I don't know.
Like Rocky IV?
They should have done a training montage for damn sure, like running up the mountains. They were just all clustered in this one part of the beach. And like, I don't know what they were shooting at in the water. I didn't see anything out there.
I think it was just like shooting practice. They were just practicing shooting.
I guess so. It was just weird. Like, Bo-Katan's walking through and looking around. And in my head, she's thinking, kind of sad training camp is this?
I mean, I think the intention is she is walking around amongst her people, other Mandalorians doing training that she can remember from when she was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
Seeing that the ways of Mandalore are not gone, you know, they've just been kind of relocated. And we're getting all these parallels between her and Grogu throughout this. So, you know, she was a convert. She's, you know, she's not a foundling or anything like that. But her kind of acceptance of this version of the way or this teaching,
yeah,
is allowing her to just have the things that she has. That she had no purpose. Like, when we see her in the beginning of the season, she's all laid out on a throne in an empty room and there's no one around. It's just her and a robot.
Yeah.
You know, now she's surrounded by other Mandalorians. They respect her. They follow her orders. You know, they follow these teachings. And she's got to be, I think she's really finding herself enjoying it, you know? And she even asks Din when they're around the campfire, like, how do you eat around other people? And he goes, you don't. You have to go and find a quiet spot by yourself. Nobody's around, so you can remove your helmet and eat. And she's getting ready to go, and Paz Vizsla says, hunting party leader gets the honor of staying by the fire.
Yeah.
So now, like, she's getting all these respectful accolades. Like, here's a guy that would not have been on her side.
Right. You thought for sure that dude was going to have a problem with her being around.
I 100% thought. Because, yeah. I mean, like, the, you know, he wanted the Darksaber as soon as he saw it. Why would he want another person with claims to, you know, I guess Mandalorian royalty, but... If all that matters is the way, then none of those things matter. You know? So I just think she's really finding herself and enjoying it. And we see that in the fact that she is quick to aid in the search for the foundling that gets taken by the dragon. I mean, look, how many dragons are we going to see in this dang show?
Lots of dragons and giant snapping turtles.
Right? Alligator snapping turtles?
Yeah.
Dragons in the sewers?
Also, I get it. Like, the dragon's kind of like a bird kind of thing. When they go to the nest and Pris Vizsla goes in there and he thinks it's his kid and it turns out to be the babies, the mama comes there and just, like, regurgitates Vizsla's kid. Like, I was like, this is silly. Yeah,
so that was part of my dislike parts of this episode. Right. Which were 2 days later, she still hasn't, the mama, whatever that is, hasn't eaten the kid or digested him at least partly so that she can throw up the bits and pieces for the little babies to eat. It doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense. They get down there and they're like, hey, we got to climb this wall in the morning, so we're going to camp here instead of trying to do it in the middle of the night, which I guess is safe. But, like, how legitimate of a chance do you expect that this kid's alive? Like, nobody should expect that kid would still be alive. Nobody. It should be, we're going up there to kill this thing, and if the kid just happens to still be alive, bonus. You know? But yeah. But everything they say is, if you do this, then it'll kill the child. If you do that, then it'll kill the blasters and it'll kill the child.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
Thing's going to kill the child.
Why didn't the thing kill the child in the first place?
Right.
That don't make no sense.
Again, set up perimeters. This has happened more than once. It's not the first time they stole a kid.
Again. Or,
yeah. Again.
Again.
It didn't make sense. Also, a scene I didn't think was done very well. Well, two things. The chase scene on the speeder bike through Coruscant looked very green screen.
It did. It did look very green screen.
I feel like this is a thing lately with not only Disney Plus shows, but Marvel movies as well. I know there was a thing where they apparently cut the budget on a lot of that stuff. And you're seeing the effects of that, I think, in the special effects. Now, when they're doing the stuff in the volume, that looks amazing. But stuff like that where you know it's on something and it's against a green screen, maybe not the volume, it just looked, it didn't look good.
There was a few parts during when the flying portion where just like, ooh, that's a little rough.
It did look rough. The second thing that I just thought looked silly was when they were just like shooting the grappling hooks and scaling up the mountain. It looked like a police academy scene. I kept waiting for Tackleberry to show up.
I kept waiting for somebody to do the Batman and Robin walking up the wall thing from the TV show.
Oh, yeah.
There was some good stuff in this episode, obviously. Some fun stuff. We got to see Grogu and the Armorer bonding.
Yeah.
Which was cool.
That was nice.
Grogu got a new piece of armor.
Yeah.
Right on his chest, which means...
He looks like Flavor Flav now.
Which means somebody will shoot him in the chest soon because, you know, that's why you have armor.
Yeah. He's going to get capped.
Yeah,
but somebody's going to shoot at him.
It's the Chekhov's gun kind of thing.
Right, right.
You know, it's there, must be shot. And then we also saw Bo-Katan when she comes back. She is welcomed back with the big, you know, victor's welcome. And the armorer is like, you know, you have done yourself and your clan proud and all these things. And come inside and I'm going to fix you, you know, fix your arm, your plate, you know, you're missing your armor piece.
Yeah.
And she says, can you put a mythosaur on it? And she's like, yeah, mythosaur belongs to all of us. We are all the mythosaur.
Because she asked her, like, do you want a night owl?
Right. She asked if you want a night owl. She says, would it be okay if I had a night owl on one side and a mythosaur on the other side? Mythosaur is for all of us. We are all the mythosaur, and the mythosaur is us. And then she says, because I saw one. And she's like, yes, we have many visions. We have visions of things. And she's like, no. I saw one in the mines, in the living waters. And she's like, yeah, this is the way. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I'm trying to tell you. I saw it.
Now, why do you think she told the armorer and didn't tell the Mandalorian that she saw that?
I think she told the armorer to gauge her response, but also knowing that the armorer is tight-lipped. She's not gonna go talking outside of class, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But also, I think she's still concerned that Din is the guy that's supposed to end up being the leader, and she wants to be the leader.
Right, because that's the whole story behind the Mythosaur. Like, she definitely wants to be the leader. And I also believe, like, she thought for so long that all that was fairy tales and, like, it wasn't true. And right. This is all crap.
I think she sees one. I think she's conflicted. I mean, you know, also, she's convinced herself she saw one. But I think it took her some time to be like, yeah, okay, I actually did see it.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Like sitting there.
I don't think she was trusting her own eyes for a moment, you know?
She was probably processing all that while she was waiting for the Mandalorian to come to after she pulled him out of the waters.
Right.
Because obviously.
Like, do I say something? Do I not say something?
Yeah, like did I see what I thought?
I'll ask him if he
saw
something, and if he saw it, then I'll be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. There's some more connecting going on with the Mandalorian and Grogu. Like, you know, there's starting to be like. A father-son almost kind of bond with him. Like,
sure.
He was putting him to go against the other kid. And it's
right.
Like, you got this. Like, you can do it. And he kept getting... And you knew, like, he's going to get shot twice, and then he's going to do something. And I thought he was going to use the, like, force choke that kid or something. Like, use your powers. Like, I know you can do it. Like, just go ahead and do it. Kid's like, all right.
I mean, the thing with the jump over the kid and then the jump back, I was just like... That looks terrible.
Yeah.
Looked like somebody took a doll on a string and said, jump back. All right.
Yeah. It's weird, man. Cause like we never questioned the special effects in this show before this, but it seems like this season. And again, like I said, there were questionable CGI in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. Some of the stuff in Thor: Love and Thunder did not look good either. So it's
have we gotten to the point where we've seen so much really good stuff that any single variant of that is just jumps out at you?
I mean, probably. Like I watched Cocaine Bear over the weekend, and you know, did a motion capture bear, got in a bear suit, but some of the stuff was like you could tell CGI, and it was not done well.
No,
now,
I mean,
granted, it's Cocaine Bear.
It's Cocaine Bear.
And the budget is not big for Cocaine Bear.
Right. That thing's making money.
It is as dumb as you would think it is.
I imagine.
Yeah, it's a fine watch, but at no point was I just like dying laughing because it's trying to be like a horror movie, but it's also trying to be a comedy.
It's a show called Cocaine Bear.
Yeah.
I mean... Come on.
When's Meth Shark coming out? I mean, that's got to be around the corner at some point. Meth Shark.
No, let's do like Meth Koala.
Yeah.
Nobody will see that
meth
coming.
Meth Sloth. Just a sloth on like crack. Just like, running around.
That sloth's moving way too fast. And it'd just be like moving.
Think about it. They got those claws, man. Like a high-speed sloth horror movie. Think about that. What are we doing?
I don't know what we're doing.
I don't know either.
What are we doing?
Yeah, Cocaine Bear.
Cocaine Bear.
But I mean, again, like I said, it's been put out there in the news that Disney was wanting to bring down the budget of a lot of these shows and movies because they just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the first places they cut a budget was with the special effects. And you're seeing it. And you never saw that in the last two seasons of The Mandalorian. The only complaint from season two of The Mandalorian was with Luke Skywalker and the way they did the deep fake, which right. didn't look good. And then a guy on the internet did it, and then they hired him. And you saw what he did in the Book of Boba Fett episode.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I was listening to a different podcast, the Smartless podcast.
Okay.
And they had, Jon Favreau on there. Mm-hmm. And they were talking, of course, about Mandalorian and everything, the stuff he's done with that and the stuff he did with Marvel. And he talked about the difference between the last episode of The Mandalorian where they had Luke and then the next time we saw Luke and how much better it looked and how different it looked and how much more synced up it was. So, you know, he talked about like the technology that they use.
Right.
For all these things. It's crazy the amount of stuff. And he helped pioneer that with all the Marvel movies.
And also with Lion King.
Yeah, and the Lion King. Yeah, that's what he talked about, the Lion King. But and the Jungle Book too, I think.
That's what I meant. He did Jungle Book first, then Lion King. I didn't like the way the animals' mouths moved in the Lion King live action because they didn't have emotions like in the cartoons. You know, you can make them do all the emotions. That trying to do it with what was supposed to be real animals just didn't look right. But Jungle Book, I thought, looked incredible. Like that was amazing looking.
Yeah.
And to think about the guy that they ended up hiring to do the Book of Boba Fett episodes for Luke Skywalker's face, and this right here tells you a lot about how much they're cutting budget-wise when it comes to special effects. This guy did that deep fake better than they did from his computer at his house.
Sure.
Like, Disney has all this money, and they couldn't get it right. And the de-aging process is
iffy. Still new. It's still new.
I mean,
they're still working a lot of that stuff out.
Yeah, when we saw Tron Legacy and they did try to do young Jeff Bridges, that was terrible.
Yeah, that didn't look good at all. But
no, but the de-aging they did on Harrison Ford in the upcoming new Indiana Jones film looks really good. I mean, it looks straight up like
from the trailers, it does.
Well, what they did with him, they combined old stock footage of Harrison Ford, which I don't think they did with Mark Hamill. I think they just took Mark Hamill's face and then tried to de-age it to put it on there. They took old stock footage from the other Indiana Jones movies and then current footage of Harrison Ford and kind of melded the two together. Because in the trailer, that scene, I mean, that just looks like they pulled that from, you know, one of the other Indiana Jones movies. But then again, like you said, that's just a little three-second snippet. We don't know how it's going to look on a big screen.
Yep. We're off the topic as per usual.
Why would we do anything else?
Why would we? Have y'all ever seen Perfect Hair Forever? If you haven't seen Perfect Hair Forever,
go find it.
Go find it and watch it.
Yeah, it's great.
It is insane. It's hilarious, but it is insane.
It is. So looking ahead to next week's episode, where do we think, does it continue this story with Bo-Katan and the Armorer and her trying to convince the Armorer, like, no, this Mythosaur thing is real? Does she take the Armorer to Mandalore to go into the living waters? Because, I mean, even though Mando came back with a little vial of water and she poured it in the pensive, and it's like, yes, this is the water.
The pensive.
I'd still think she also wants to see this.
Well,
see the water anyway.
It's true. We're kind of at a crossroads now. So Bo and Din and Grogu are all at the covert. It's the covert. That's what it's called. It's a covert. I've been trying. I listened to last week's episode earlier, and I was just like, I could never say the right word. It's a covert. That's what they call it.
Okay.
A grouping of Mandalorians is a covert.
Is it covert?
Because they are hiding covertly.
Oh, look at you. Okay.
Anyway, so we've kind of reached this crossroads in the story where now, where do we go from here?
Right.
Where does the story go from here? The only things that we have that are sort of undone threads are, we've got the pirates back at Navarro, and we've got whatever empire lord or warlord or whatever may have attacked Bo-Katan's palace. So one of those two stories is going to get picked up next, I think.
Yeah, because his main thing after he got Grogu back was to redeem himself, which he's done now.
Done.
So that storyline's wrapped up.
Check.
Now you got a new storyline with Bo-Katan seeing a mythosaur and like, oh, the stories were true. It's like, now how do we go forward with rebuilding Mandalore now that we know it's not a planet that's uninhabitable? You can go to Mandalore. And then you also have, we haven't gotten Moff Gideon back yet.
Mandalore is not a place. Yeah. It is a people.
It is a people. Moff Gideon's going to make an appearance. You've got to deal with that. Whatever's going to happen with Dr. Pershing and what's her face on that planet.
Dr. Pershing is Jello.
Yeah. He's mush.
He is mush.
And then there's also the rumor that Sabine Wren is going to make an appearance, because I would feel like for those who are uninitiated into Rebels, because I'm sure there are Star Wars fans who don't watch the cartoons. It's just like, we watch the movies, we watch the TV show.
Sure.
So setting Ahsoka up, which is going to be coming out later on this year, by introducing Sabine Wren and Ahsoka again and leading maybe toward the, not the finale, but like at some point an episode leading, you know, introducing people to these characters, I would figure that's going to come into play as well. Do we see Luke again? Do we see any other legacy characters? I don't know.
I don't think we're going to see Luke. I just don't feel like it's germane to the story anymore.
It really isn't, now that Grogu made his decision.
Yeah.
You know, to go back to the Mandalorian. But there's a lot of ways it can go from here, because after next week's episode, we only got four left because there's nine episodes. So they've got a lot of stuff they need to start.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So this is the crossroads point.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we're about halfway in. Now we get to see the second half direction. I don't know. I have no idea. This show is weird. Like, you feel like there should be like a whole season arc, and it should take a whole season to do a certain thing. And then they're like, nope, second episode, Mind's a Mandalore.
Yeah.
You know, bath time.
bath time with Mando.
It's just like, you know, you thought this was going to take a while. Well, we just decided to do it immediately.
Right. And there's also, go back to, what's the name of the planet? I always forget the name of the planet.
Where, Dave Navarro.
Yes, Dave Navarro, Jane's Addiction Planet. we got to go back there, because you have to resolve that storyline with IG-88,
right?
IG-11.
IG-11, the pirates. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah, the pirates. I mean, like,
we've got the pirates,
yeah,
and we've got the Imperial warlord or whoever that attacked Bo-Katan and her place.
Yeah.
So there's those two big stories.
Right, because
and neither one of those factor into Bo-Katan and her desire and the mythosaur.
Right.
Well, actually, I take that back. I could see maybe part of what you were saying, which is, hey, why don't a few of you come with us to Mandalore and come see our, you know, come back to the homeworld. I'm going to show you living waters and whatever, right? And while we're doing that, let's go see if there's anything left in my house, and maybe we can find whoever did this to my house in the first place.
Right.
So you could get like a twofer. Like a twofer.
Well, I mean, in the trailer for this season, there's a few scenes where all the Mandalorians are on Navarro, and they're in that city in a big shootout and stuff. So that's probably how they deal with the pirates. They all go help Mando to take out the pirates here, because this boy Creef is a Greef Karga is
Creef Garga.
Yeah. is in over his head now that he's you know, pissed off the pirates. So there's like all kinds of things.
Right. There's so many things that could be going on that they're not aware of.
Yeah. So I guess, like you said, we're at the halfway point. I guess we'll find out. That's got to start next week.
What do you think will happen, listener?
Yes.
Send us a message. Listeners,
we got a new one.
Well, I'm just, everybody that is listening is a listener. Doesn't matter if there's 20 people in a room or one person. They are a listener.
Well, if there's 20 people, they're listeners.
Each individual person is a listener.
Then they're not in a group of 20. That's an individual. That's a single person.
You can be an individual in a room full of people.
Sure.
That's how I lived the 90s.
fair.
Anyway, tell us what you think. Send us a message at wehavespokenpod23@gmail.com. Send us a message at our We Have Spoken podcast Facebook page. Send us pigeon.
A pigeon?
Pigeon.
Whoa.
A snail mail. Okay. An AOL instant messenger.
Let us know if you'd like a video companion show to go along with
You've
this podcast.
Got mail.
Because we can, if you follow us on Facebook and you spread the word about our Facebook page, we can do spread like a Facebook word. Live.
Yuck.
Which Mike would really enjoy.
I don't want to. But if y'all want it, I'll do it.
If you want to see how much Mike loves being on camera, go back on the Facebook page and find our episode from Fan Expo back in January.
You will note, listener, that during that live recording, we were not prepared or told about. I don't look at the cameras once.
You do not.
Not a single time.
You do not look at the camera.
I look at Chuck and I look at the audience. A few times I steal hateful glances at the guy that's producing it, even though he was a really nice guy.
He was a really nice guy. He was trying to make really you feel comfortable nice and you guy. Were just like, nope.
I was like, I don't want to do this. And I don't want to be here. But he was a really nice guy. He really was. He's a good professional producer, because you could tell, because like he knew, you could tell I was like not feeling it. And he's just like, nah, it's going to be fine, man. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
You know, he tried to cool me out.
And the video quality was amazing.
Oh, the video quality and the sound was great.
Yeah. I did not expect it to be that.
Yeah, good. It turned out great. I didn't like it because I wasn't prepared, and I don't like to not be prepared.
But by the end of it, you were fine. And then we had people come up and tell us they enjoyed the show. And
I know.
That was great.
I know. Look, I learned my lessons after the fact.
Yeah.
I don't do it. I don't learn during. Right. It's much after. It's after when I'm allowed to reflect.
Yeah. Well, you know, for next year, be prepared.
Oh, yeah. For next year. Y'all come out for that.
Yeah. Fan Expo in January 2024. We'll be back. We'll have another panel. It'll be great.
This time, if we do, I will be prepared.
Yeah, well, we both will, because I was, like you, just prepared for audio. I didn't know there was going to be cameras and an audience. So, yeah. There's that. All right, so that wraps up this episode of The Mandalorian. Remember to subscribe on all your streaming platforms for those of you who are not listening to us on the radio right now. And leave us a review and rate the podcast and let us know what you think. Tell all your friends about it.
Give us
all
a follow, things. Right?
Yeah, smash.
Isn't
that
a thing? Oh, I hate that. I hate
smash
it.
Smash the subscribe button.
I hate that. Smash the subscribe. Stupid.
Lightly press the subscribe button.
Depress the subscribe button with your finger.
With your face. Do it on your face.
Did you see the? I'm sorry. I know we're closing.
Nah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Did you see the Saturday Night Live with Donald Glover?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you remember the Jurassic Park courtroom scene?
Yes.
And he's like, could you read the indemnification on the back of your Velociraptor all-access pass? And the guy says, I can't read it. It's got my friend Scott's blood on it. And he says, well, move your friend Scott's blood around with your finger until you can read it.
I remember that. The skit that sticks out for me during that one is the A Quiet Place skit. That was
yeah, that was
good.
Pretty good.
As they're trying to walk through the woods on the salt,
right? And then there was the one where he did the Orange Juice Jones,
yeah,
takeoff, which yeah. I think a lot of people didn't get. You know, a lot of the younger crowd were like, yeah. "What is this about?"
That's way old school.
It's way old school.
Yeah. So there you go. There we go on a tangent right at the end of the show. And on that note, for Michael Grimion, I am Chuck P.
On
all the notes. This has been the We Have Spoken podcast. And until next time, this is the way.
With your finger.